Panel members, welcome to the meeting. This is a continuation. We are our meeting last week when we did a recap on the public employment service. Now today we are going to go clause by clause to check if there are issues that members would like to raise, so that we can generate an A list, and then we'll see going forward. Honorable William, okay, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on section 7.1 of the bill, it says the minister may, after consulting the board, and we feel that that should change to NEDLAC, not the board. 7.1. Because fundamentally, the NEDLAC is more representative, and therefore it will be discussed when the minister consulting, instead of consulting the board.
There's an input by Honorable Williams. The board, NEDLAC, consultation, minister, Honorable Nyagema.
Thank you, Sir President. I think maybe the department might clarify us. I'd rather to check whether in appointing the board, is it in consultation with NEDLAC? I'm raising this, if that is the case, obviously I don't think then if there's anything that has to be consulted, it has to go to NEDLAC, if then the board, if the appointment of the board is through the process of NEDLAC. That's what we wanted to clarify on that one, sir.
May I welcome Tatu Kweta and your team, Advocate Gordon, Nomza Nomrotova, and your team. Are there some, do you want to respond to this one or? Well, Morotoba will give an input later. Well, let's have Morotoba first and then.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think this matter was debated extensively also at NEDLAC. If honorable members can go to clause 21 of the bill, chapter 4, and the issue here is that firstly, in terms of those members that represent organized labor, business, and community, including the state, the minister, especially those three categories of NEDLAC, the minister normally appoints members that are supported by NEDLAC. Now, there's an issue around policy matters. Obviously,
sorry.
in the department we have a number of commissions. The employment, the employment.
The employment commissions, the UI board, etc. And in all instances, members who serve there are nominated through NEDLAC structures. Now, the question that confronted us is, when you say NEDLAC, because you are talking about the same constituencies, is it a question of trust that the people nominated by the constituencies to serve on the board may not necessarily have the same capacity as other representatives of the same organizations that serve on the NEDLAC structures. And we felt that you know, that process can also lead to hamstring the processes of decision making, because if you have a board that cannot on major decisions, we accept that if there are fundamental policy issues, just like in any other legislation, those will have to go to NEDLAC. In fact, all of them go to NEDLAC. But if there are operational decisions that have to be made on the schemes and the policy issue are settled, if on every administrative aspect, the minister has to go to the, I mean, to NEDLAC, it may end up impacting seriously on operational procedure. So maybe to go back to Honorable Nyakemba's answer, is that in terms of appointing the board, yes, the minister works with NEDLAC, and have to appoint people that are nominated by NEDLAC structures. Thank you.
Chair, Mr. Moratoba has explained everything properly, Chair. Because Policy 1 does state that 3 persons must be from NEDLAC, which will be the composition of the board, which means NEDLAC will be appointed in the board. There will be 3 persons from NEDLAC that will be in the board of the employment services. Therefore, Clause 7.1, when it says consulting the board, which means consulting the board will also be consulting NEDLAC as well, 3 members of NEDLAC, which will be part of the board, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Are we finding each other on this one? Let's move on. Any other input on other clauses? We don't have to go page by page. If you want to raise something on clause 22 or clause 30, if there is any, you are free to do that. Honorable Hanari.
Thanks, Chair. On the same clause 21, the under 21.1b, we say 3 persons appointed ex officio to represent the interests of the state. Do you mean that these people will be appointed by the minister, or by parliament, or by the cabinet? And then 21.3, they say the appointment of the members contemplated in subsection 2A and 2B must be done after following a fair and a competitive selection process. When I look at all the whole of 21, about how those people, who appoint those particular people, I don't see how can it be in a, because to honest, 2A and B just talk about it, the term of office. It does not talk about the process of appointing these particular people. And when I look at 21.1A, A, B, C, I don't see how can it be competitive, because it's very clear that the chairperson is going to be a non-voting member. We are not very clear about how that chairperson is going to be appointed. It's very clear that the three persons appointed ex officio, is not very clear. Whoever appoints them is not going to be competitive. And those appointed by organized labor, only labor must agree that these are the people we allocate. And business must also do the same. So I don't see how can it be in a maybe it's fair for labor to appoint their own people, but we could let us not call it competitive selection process.
Thank you for the honorable Khanal. Do members want to engage on this one, or are we, is there sufficient consensus? Or we are listening? You can raise any matter from any clause. Honorable Mutal.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for being a bit late. I did indicate I would be. Just something that needs clarification for me. During the briefing last week, Mr. Morotaba referred to the protected employment enterprises. And he said there was a feeling, especially from the lobby group to do with people with disabilities, that this should be changed to support it. I'm not sure whether it was being referred to the committee to agree to the support it, or whether indeed the department would then change the reference from protected to supported. I just need some clarity on that.
Shelter to supported, I think the decision lies with us. There were recommendations from those structures that they'll prefer these factories to be called the supported rather than sheltered employment factories. But if we still feel strongly that they should remain sheltered employment, the decision lies with us. That's a recommendation coming from the public hearing. So how do members feel on this one? Honorable Mutau.
Chair, I was going to say, in the bill itself, it's now being referred to as protected, not sheltered. And I think that was a step in the right direction. But if the people who are directly affected believe that the name is important to them, I think we should support them in that regard.
Chair, there's a big issue about the restructuring of the entirety of the sheltered stroke protected employment. And I think the strong feeling which we got, or the strong sense we got from the from the public hearings, was that the structure, the way it is now, is more or less an isolationist structure. It is isolating disabled people from participating in the broader economy, and also as part of the socialization of disabled people. And that part of this amendment process must be to, or part of what this bill needs to provide for, is to ensure that sheltered or protected employment does not remain isolated from the entirety of society, but that it's integrated, and that we should look at disabled people differently, as people who are differently abled, and should not be legitimizing as government institutions that seek to isolate them. So I think it's one of the things that we feel quite strongly as the ANC that we need to look at. How do we structure this bill in such a way that we are not seen to be legitimizing the isolation of disabled people from the society in its entirety? Yeah. Thanks.
Very difficult to jump around.
It's allowed.
Very difficult. I'm at clause 7-2. You talk about the minister being able, after consulting with the board, to without limiting the subsection 1, a scheme may provide for turnaround strategies, layoff, retraining, or alternative employment opportunities. Personally, I don't know. This word turnaround strategy, it has been bandied around so much that it has no meaning, quite, to be honest. Is there any way in which you can at least define it so that we can all have the same understanding of what this turnaround strategy is? Because I've heard people talking about this turnaround strategy, and they tend so much that they are actually going into around in circles, and they never stop. But there's no nothing is produced. On 8-1, clause 8-1, where you talk about foreign nationals within the territory not being given the work without work permit, I thought it was a standard rule. I thought it's our legislation. Everybody knew that you can't employ a foreign national. I don't know whether it is accommodated by some legislation of Home Affairs. And if it is accommodated, why do we repeat it here? Chair, can I check something?
Yes,
are all these comments going to be responded to at one point? Or we are just talking for the sake of talking?
No, what's happening is that we're giving input, and then if there's something that the department wants to explain, and the legal team, they will raise their hands and say, no, but have you looked at this and this and that? And for me, if they are quiet, it means that the English say silence means consent. And if there's any major thing that they want to raise, they will raise their hands. I think we are doing well for now. They will be recording this discussion, and then after that, when we meet again, they'll present an A list. So anyone wants to say something, you can only say it in this meeting so that it gets recorded.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. I thought that there were a number of issues raised, and we also wanted to comment on some of those issues. Just to partly assist the process, but also to find a better way of moving forward on some of the comments. And we've noted, I think there was the first one on section 21 relating to the board. Now we have picked up that the cross referencing to start with is wrong there. It should be on 21.1, that is section 21.3, talking to appointment of the members contemplated in subsection 2A and B. So it should actually be 2.1. That 2 must be changed to 1. And the issue there is that the minister may for instance, put an advert for the chairperson, including the various government departments that may be interested in serving the board, and in that way they can then be a shortlisting and all that. Now, if it means that we also do the explanation of the process, we may also look into the question of the constitution of the, that is the appointment of the, that is the constitution of the board itself, and see if we can come up with a clause that would allay the fears of honourable members, or make it clear that that is the process that the minister must actually follow in terms of appointing the state representatives and the chairperson of the board. We also wanted to comment on Chapter 6. I think Honorable Manamela is right in terms of the sentiment expressed. But however, in terms of Section 42, we were the ones who were the first to admit that that definition that says protected, which is now proposed to be supported, that is that on 42.1, to promote work and employment opportunities for persons with disabilities and whose disability do not allow them to obtain employment in the labor market. We agree that that definition is problematic. We agree that we use the definition as provided for by the disability group and representatives, in that I don't think the argument was around the model of the factories and the content. The United Nations Convention, which they quoted, which we are currently using and other countries are using, allows for establishment of such factories, but it is very clear in its definition that it talks about psychodevelopmental. We will use the definition that is in line with the convention. That is why they propose that we remove that definition as we have it, because it does have the effect of basically perpetuating what Honorable Manamela was saying, that you create these factories and then you then assume that anybody with disability must be confined to them. It's just like any one of us here may be involved in an accident tomorrow. It doesn't mean that with the wheelchair or any other assistive devices you can't continue to do the work that you are doing, and you must therefore now move to supported factories. These ones are specifically meant for those people that have psychodevelopmental problems. In fact, like we said, social development is funding or subsidizing 600 of such private factories. And even the Department of Education, apart from the mainstream schooling system, they do have schools that are specifically meant not for people with disabilities, but for those children that, after assessment, it was discovered that they have a psychodevelopmental problem, and therefore they need special kind of care and assistance, and that is why they have such schools. And in most cases, our recruitment or our feeder process comes from people who have reached, who have actually reached school leaving age, and therefore cannot actually find employment in other areas, and they are referred to us by psychologists after assessment. So we were proposing that we use the definition as provided by the representative, Honorable Shepherd.
But an impression should not be created that these factories are only meant for people with disabilities,
yes,
because it's not.
Yes.
It's just that they'll be given a preference. particularly if those who come from the military. Because I mean, this, I don't know if maybe we have now changed this whole thing, you know. Because when it was initially started, it was a factory, there were factories that were supposed to accommodate demobilized soldiers, some of them with injuries from war, from the past wars. And in our discussion when we were talking about this, there was an issue raised about ex-combatants of the liberation movement. Well, or they are demobilized from the army, and some of them are with difficulties, so that they too should be absorbed in this factory. I don't know if there was a change in terms of focus, or if that still holds. I just want to be clarified on this one.
Thanks, Chairperson. We have interacted with the military veterans, the department, and currently they are in a process of establishing special factories. In fact, and it's just that the process has been slow at because of the regulatory framework that they had to develop. In our discussion with them, the feeling was that they know the history of the factories, because these factories moved from various departments. And at some stage, it is true that they accommodated a lot of ex-service person who got injured and traumatized during military operations, and as such, were booked off from normal duties, and because of the extent of the trauma, it was found that they were mentally and so on seriously affected to an extent that they cannot function in a normal labor market, that they got confined. But the discussion with the military veterans is that they want to now look not necessarily at those ex-veterans that have mental and psychological problems, but veterans that cannot find employment. In fact, the whole idea when we discussed with them was that they want to introduce a cut-off point that is at the age of 45. They don't want people who are older than that. They want to release them from the military and train them in the Garotech. You have got another institution in Polokwane, all the former military bases of the TBVC state that they've now since converted in some instances into colleges, that they then would want to use them as part of a passage of the veterans that are not in the military, but everyone who is approaching the age of 45 as a transition and the reintegration into communities. And hence, we then decided that maybe if that is the route that they are going, we should remove the element of the ex-combatants from the bill, in order to basically clash or interfere with the military veterans process that is currently unfolding. Thank you.
Mr. Wu. Thank you, Chair. Chair, the other issue that was raised by the members was in clause 81 about the Immigration Act. 81, Chair, I agree with the member, Chair, the honourable member, that the Immigration Act does provide for criminal liability, Chair, for a person who works without an employer who employs a person without a valid work permit, Chair. And on top of that, Chair, the Immigration Act provides for the penalty
for violating Section 49 of the Immigration Act, Chair. It is in this particular bill, Chair, I can say just for emphasis that even the heading is the employment of foreign nationals and the policy to be considered here in Clause 8, Chair, is that the South African citizens and permanent residents must have priority, Chair, for employment besides the foreign nationals. So that foreign nationals come second to South African citizens and permanent residents. I think the clause, the sub-clause 1, Chair, is that for emphasis, Chair, that the foreign nationals must not be employed without a valid work permit. And then the other issue, Chair, that was raised by one of the was in clause 23, sub 3, where in the board it states that sub 23 says states that at least 30 days notice must be given for a meeting of the board at which an amendment to the constitution or the making of a regulation is to be considered. Now the stakeholder, Chair, raised that a regulation is made by the minister, not by the board. But Chair, I think I can concede here there may be an unintended consequence, Chair, maybe a misinterpretation of the provision, because a regulation is in terms of I think it's clause 52. The minister makes the regulations, and the minister consults the board. So the reason, Chair, that the regulation is included in 23.3 is that when the board holds a meeting, there must be 30 days notice to other members, Chair. I think, Chair, there could be an improvement here in sub 3, Chair, to emphasize that the making of that at least 3 days notice must be given for a meeting of the board at which an amendment to the constitution or the making of a regulation by the minister is to be considered. I think we can improve, Chair, if the committee would agree to that, so that it is clear that it's the minister who's going to be making the regulations, and the board is only will be considering the regulations by the minister in that meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. There was a talk last week about 52.19. That the provision is too wide. I don't know, I don't remember who raised that. Does anyone remember either reason?
Yes, Chair. I touched upon it last week as well. It was one of the stakeholders, Chair, who was stating that it was 52.1G, which states that the minister may, after consultation with the Employment Services Board, make a regulation relating to any other matter relating to the provision of public employment services or the regulation of private employment agencies. Now the stakeholder stated that Parliament, I'm not sure, I'm not sure the exact words, but the table was stating that just any other matter is too wide, Chair, and the minister may encroach on other issues unrelated to the power given by the Parliament to the minister. Now, Chair, the stakeholder was not, there is a judgment, a Bezuidenhout judgment, Chair, but the stakeholder did not specify as to where he was coming from, Chair. But I can assume that he was referring to the Bezuidenhout judgment, which stated that Parliament cannot, the minister may not be given too wide powers, there must be specific powers, Chair, that the minister must implement or exercise. Now, Chair, the clause itself, it seems to be specific to me, Chair. It says that any other matter relating to the provision of
public employment services or the regulation of private employment agencies, which means the minister will have to confine himself or herself to the provision of public employment services or the regulation of private employment agencies, not a carte blanche of free reign power that the minister may exercise. That is, if Parliament passes this particular proposed legislation and gives the minister this particular power, so I think it was around that issue that the stakeholder was worried about. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Do other members still have some comments to make on this? Mr. Moroto, when your team, are you able to make a determination based on our discussions here in terms of, I'm talking into the legal team, in terms of our A list in our next meeting? Okay. What do we do? Do we go clause by clause now just to check if there are issues that members would like to comment on, or do we leave it to the next meeting? It's actually tomorrow. Will you be able to do the A list for tomorrow's meeting? Okay. If there's no any other matter, other members, I think we should. Honorable Khanabe,
I'm sure you are aware that I'm disadvantaged because I could not be set in the previous meeting. I'm not taking the opportunity. Can I be clarified about under 15.1 and 15.2? Can you just give me the difference? Because you can't say on no person may charge a fee to any work seeker for providing employment services to that work seeker. And then two, you then say there are certain people who must be charged fees. Who can be charged fees? I think you are saying certain people can be may be charged fees if the minister, after consulting the board, decide otherwise. Because I thought 15.1 is quite certain that no person, and it does not say except if it is within clause 2. I don't know, it confuses me a little bit.
Can I say, if I still remember, why this clause? It's because, you know, there are these people, when you get, they advertise in the papers that if I've got a job for 200 secretaries, and then to register to get this job, you need 2,000 rand. So there is no law that we can quote that can help you to convict such people. I think part of the reason why this thing is coming into being is to stop those who are selling jobs to job seekers, I think. But anyway, we'll get Mr. Morodova, would you like to
say something? Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, you are correct, Honorable Chairperson, that even the ILO Convention prohibits the charging of fees to work seekers, especially for providing employment services as defined under the definitions. Now, the difficulty, Honorable Chairperson, comes in the exception category, because for vulnerable work seekers, we needed a flaw, and that is why even in the offences we have basically indicated what the penalty is for getting involved into that practice. However, the difficulty comes in when you go to different levels. some of you may be recruited as CEOs, and soccer players don't want to negotiate with a club on the transfer fees and visas to go and play in London and all that. Now, those people will normally use agents, boxers, and models and all that. Now, in those instances, what this does on two is that for categories of work seekers, the minister may make regulations under which private employment agencies may then be entitled to a fee, and the fee arrangements will be between that person and the agent that is placing that person, a boxer and the trainer or the promoter, for instance. Because in most cases, it is the boxer who fights in a bout, and the money is allocated as a prize. But as to what the boxer eventually gets, and the trainer and the staff get, they then divide amongst the total take of the winning prize and so on. So two allows for those exceptions, and that should then be prescribed. And I think this is consistent with the ILO convention, which basically says for vulnerable workers we must basically establish a floor that prohibits in terms of one private employment agencies to charge them for those services.
And this this convention is ratified.
Well, as South Africa, we have not ratified the convention, but it is an ILO convention, which the spirit of it, by virtue of our participation in the ILO, we embrace. But with the passage of the employment services, it then paves a way for us to also go and ratify that convention. The difficulty in ratifying a convention, when you don't have legal instruments to actually enforce its application, is that when you come to provide, that is submitting reports to the ILO, you will be found not to be compliant because you don't have the necessary legal instruments. That is why in most cases we have tried to make sure that where we have legislative means to enable us to enforce a particular, that is compliance in a specific area, when there's a convention related to that, we can then recommend to yourself and Parliament to ratify that convention as a country. Thank you.
And this is the beginning of that process towards the ratification of the ILO, of this convention. Honourable Madam, I see your hand up. I think we agree on that, and for the elaboration of why there would be a need for, for 15.2. I think it makes sense. So maybe let's leave it at that. Thank you, Baya. Honorable Gerazahai. Is there any that was off the record? Is there anything that members would like to raise pertaining to this amendment? Yeah, let's move on to minutes. But maybe say, let me thank the legal team, Mr. Morotova and your team. We are doing our rituals now. You can remain if you like. But we're meeting tomorrow, what time? 9 o'clock. Next door. S26.
Can I make a proposal, sir? Hopefully.
Honorable,
thank you. Probably not for, for tomorrow, we would like to request that we start at 9:30. Hopefully the list would be ready by end of today, if we can get that, and then we'll look at that before the meeting starts. As the parties, if we can get the list before by end of today, and then we'll start at 9:30 as the committee, so that at 9 we're able to look at the list. That's the first thing we'd like to request. The second thing is that I think for the last two or three meetings, I think we spent less than an hour with the discussions, the briefings, and everything else. And I think it would help that we find a way of structuring our time so that we don't find members having allocated 2 to 3 hours for this meeting when we actually need an hour or even less than that. So I think those who schedule the meetings, if we can actually look into that. Thank you.
That is very welcome. And anyway, why should we start so early when we only have 1 hour meeting? But I think most of the reasons that I mean, when you call a meeting, you don't know what is going to point with. But now that we know, I don't think we should be calling meetings so early. Thank you. Let's look at the minutes of the. Minutes of the 8th of October, page 1. Honorable William.
Just a quick one. How many members do we need to form a quorum?
Seven.
Okay. All right. Yeah, thank you.
We're forming a quorum. Yep. Minutes of Tuesday, the 8th. Page 1. I forgot to mention that we have 2 apologies. I'm sorry, I should have. Or actually 1. That's Mr. Mnongo. No. Honorable Van der Westhuizen has to be excused. He has a meeting. He's addressing an old age home somewhere in the city. So it's only Mr. Mnongo. No, we don't have an apology. Maybe she'll join us later. And Ms. Rumona, we don't have the apology. Page 1. There was no rain in the book. Just the prison. Page 1 of the minute of 8th of October. Page 2. Page 2. Let's say 3. And page 4. Any mover? Honorable Mokuel Machel. Yeah. Any seconder? Honorable Motau. the meeting of the 9th, Wednesday the 9th. Page 1, page 2, and page 3. Can you move on?
I move on behalf of those who attended.
Yeah, on behalf of those who attended. Meeting of the 10th. You were not?
I was not present, but I move on behalf of, because they are not moving.
No. We can't do that. Who is moving? Honorable Mutab,
yes.
Don't delay my meeting. I'll start taking your attendance.
He did have an apology, but he wasn't here.
Yeah. The 10th, minutes of the 10th, you go on page. Oh, Masrumul is not here, so it's only me.
So I'll move and you can start.
Yeah. No.
We can wait for
Master of the Church. Was it only 4 people? Yeah, it was only 4 people.
A lot of apologies.
Yeah, Honorable Mutau, you are moving?
Yes, I'm moving.
Okay, the chair is seconding.
Yeah.
Minutes of the... Meeting of the 15th of October.
I move.
You move.
Yeah,
and it's a gunner.
I'm not sure. You've been dying to move. Yeah, I've been dying. That's the only one I've got.
The Honorable Mutau is seconding. No, this is minutes of our last day. We will discuss it. Minutes of the 16th, of the 16th, page 1, page 1, page 2, page 3, any move on? The one of the ones, yeah. Honorable Khanar, now I'm taking a hand. I'm forgotten.
What an excuse.
Who's the mover? Honorable Khanar. Honorable Makubel Shele. That will be our last minute. We meeting tomorrow, what time? 9:30 is suggested.
Well, we can, I think considering the point you were making, Chair, we can actually consider meeting at 10 or 10:30. Have 30 minutes before to consider the A list.
Yeah. Okay. Then the time, 10
o'clock.
Cool. Sure.
Agree.
To those who are not here.
Thank you.
All of us will hear the meeting started.
Thank you, and goodbye.
Thank you. Can you start?
Yeah. Let's see.